reading is hard, isn't it? In our text today, it has been 40 days since Moses had left Aaron in charge of the people while he went up on Mount Sinai. The plan was for Moses to return with the stone tablets with the instructions and commandments that God had given, so that the people could learn how to be faithful to God, to the God who had proven to be so faithful to them. This is the fourth trip up the mountain and back down that Moses has made to talk with God. In fact, the Ten Commandments had already been given, but they hadn't yet been written down. And so Aaron and the tribal lead elders watched God's glory settle on the mountain. And then they looked on as Moses entered that cloud and went up the mountain. But after 40 long days of waiting in the valley, with no word from Moses or from God, the Israelites panicked. We don't tend to make the best decisions when we're panicked, do we? And that's how our story today begins, with agitated people making a very poor decision out of fear and panic. So while Moses is up on the mountain with God, up on Mount Sinai, the people have grown impatient and frightened. Israel lost faith because their human leader, Moses, had disappeared. The people wanted something tangible. God had appeared to them in the wilderness, leading them in a cloud of, in a pillar of cloud, in a pillar of fire. And then they had seen God as smoke and lightning and thunder on the mountain. But God hasn't really been seen since. Moses was the people's connection to God. And when he wasn't around, it felt as if perhaps God had deserted them. They wanted some tangible sign of God to reassure them that they were not alone. They let their restlessness fester into fear, and then their fear burned into a rage, and that fearful, restless rage just consumed their faith. It's easy to judge them, but we too get impatient waiting on God to act, don't we? Waiting's hard. Waiting faithfully is even harder. But when we begin to rely on ourselves or other people or things or systems or institutions to do what only God in God's timing can do, then we, like the Israelites, suffer the consequences of our idolatry. David Bender reminds us that it's too easy for folks to assume their own expertise and rush ahead toward accomplishments without waiting for God's guidance. It's too easy for congregations to act quickly upon a promising idea without asking the hard questions about God's will for the project. It's too easy for people to make the most important life decisions, marriage, calling, career, family, without bringing God into the conversation. It's sometimes too easy to be just like Aaron. Like the Israelites, we too often quickly forget the promises that God makes us and the promises that we make God. Sometimes I think we forget on purpose because we just want to do things our way. Other times we're just really busy, or we want something so badly that we really do forget. We try to go our own way, do what we want, make our own plans. One of the things that I find really interesting about this passage of scripture in Exodus 32 is that it shows us that idolatry often comes in a really convincing disguise. If you pay close attention, you'll see that the Israelites don't hold a festival to the golden calf. They call their act of worship a festival to Yahweh, to their God, our God. So that calf is for them not so much an alternative to God as a vehicle for them to worship God, which still breaks the commandments that God had just given them. Very rarely do we recognize our own idols for what they are. Often on the surface, they look like good, respectable, even righteous things. What are some of the things, and this is a talk back kind of sermon, what are some of the things that we might hold as idols today? We're probably not going to build a golden calf. I don't have that many gold earrings to melt down, and you probably don't either. But what are some of the things that we hold as idols?
Money.
Money.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
Family.
Houses. And none of those things are bad in and of themselves, right? We may make financial success, even just financial stability, into an idol unintentionally, or advancement in our career, or happiness for our families, or a sports team, or a political party. There are lots of things that are really good things in our lives. But when we make them the most important thing, then they become something else. When we focus on these things, whatever they are, and they're different for all of us, so that our attention is pulled away from God, then they become idols. And that's what makes them so hard to detect. Often our idolatry begins exactly the way the Israelites did. We want desperately to know that God is with us and that God has a plan for us. And instead of waiting for God to keep those promises, we grow impatient and take action ourselves, whether it's determining our own path or trying to fill the empty places in our soul with material things. It's really ironic that at the exact same time that Aaron is down in the valley scrambling to make this golden calf for the people so that they can have a visible sign of God's presence with them, up on Mount Sinai, God was discussing the plans for the tabernacle with Moses. God was telling Moses how to give the people exactly what they were longing for, a visible sign of God's presence with them. And the tabernacle was something much better than just a symbol of God's presence with God's people. It was how God would be present with the people. If you move a little further in Exodus and read in Exodus 40, when the people finally build the tabernacle, we read that a cloud covered the meeting tent and the Lord's glorious presence filled the dwelling. The chapters just previous to the one we're focused on today, Exodus 25 through 31, give detailed, very detailed plans for the tabernacle. It was a breathtakingly beautiful and ornate structure. Its precious metals and gemstones and intricate tapestries told the story of God's creation. The tabernacle was designed to be an awe-inspiring testimony to God's faithfulness to his people. And it was definitely about 1,000 times better than that golden calf. I wonder how many glorious blessings God wants to send our way that are delayed or even lost because we panic and take matters into our own hands instead of waiting on God. When we forget both the promises God has made and the promises that we made to God, and go about trying to do what we think is right, or when we panic and do something reckless without thinking about it. The Israelites were trying to make for themselves something that God had already given them as a gift. As God's people, our work is to embrace the gifts that God graciously gives us, not to try and do for ourselves what God is already doing for us. We don't make our own way to salvation. We can't manufacture God's presence among us. We don't even create fellowship among ourselves. These are all gifts from God. And we can certainly choose to reject the gifts that God has given us. We can and we do. But we don't have the power to make them, only to break them. We need to patiently wait for God's gifts, and to embrace what God has in store for us. When Israel panicked and worshiped that golden calf, they came very close to losing everything, including their lives. While all that was happening down in the valley, up on Mount Sinai, God had just finished speaking to Moses and given him the two covenant tablets, the stone tablets written by God's finger. As Moses takes the stone tablets in his hand, God shouts, "Hurry up and go down! Your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, are ruining everything. They've already abandoned the path that I commanded, and they're worshiping a golden calf." It's really interesting, if you read these verses, that both God and Moses call the Israelites your people. That's what happens in my house when the cats have done something wrong. Go see what your cat is doing. And I know I heard that from my parents growing up when one of us was misbehaving from mom to dad. He's your child. I bet that's happened in your houses as well. That's what's happening here. They're so angry, they don't even want to claim the Israelites anymore. In fact, God is so furious that he tells Moses that he is going to destroy the people and start all over with just Moses. After all, he could keep his covenant that way. He could make the descendants of Abraham a blessing through just Moses. After all, the Israelites had broken the covenant. They were no longer entitled by it to be called God's people. This anger and violence from God is hard for us to understand. But sometimes when we love so deeply, we are terribly hurt when those that we love don't live up to our expectations. We've been talking about this a lot in our Bible study of Hosea in recent weeks. Moses wasn't willing to just step aside. Instead, he refuses to get out of God's way. He reminds God of the covenant that God made with Abraham and of the one he had made with the people of Israel only weeks before. Despite the people breaking their part of the covenant, Moses tells God that God is better than that. And besides, what would this look like to the rest of the world who knows that we're your people? And then Moses begs God to calm down, not the best words to say to somebody who's in the middle of an angry fit, and to change God's mind. God, change your mind. Don't destroy these people. And do you know what? He did. This story reminds us that God's promises, God's grace and mercy are greater than his wrath. It also teaches us that our prayers matter. Moses' words, according to this passage, change God's mind. Ultimately, there is grace, but it doesn't excuse us from turning away from God, nor does it say that the people and us didn't have to live or die with the consequences of their actions. So even though God didn't incinerate Israel that day, there was serious fallout. So if you continue to read in this chapter beyond the text that we read together, first Moses goes down and he takes those stone tablets written with God's own finger and smashes them on the ground. It was a way of showing the people how badly they had sinned. They'd not only broken faith with the God who'd always been faithful to them, they had broken God's heart. Afterwards, this story is one of the kind of crazy things that happens in the Old Testament. Afterwards, Moses takes the golden calf and has it ground into dust and puts the dust into the water and makes the people drink it. And then Moses sent an army of Levites, priests, to execute the ringleaders who pressured Aaron to make the golden calf. The Levites mowed down about 3,000 people. And then God also punished the people with some sort of plague, which may or may not have had something to do with drinking the water polluted by that golden calf. It couldn't have been good for them. Our idolatry, too, our broken promises to God, have consequences. Sometimes they're just in our own lives, but often they affect those around us, and even generations after us. The good news, the gospel, is that those consequences don't have the final word. In our story today, we saw God keep his promises, even though it hurt him. Moses reminded God of the promises he made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And because God is a faithful God, he kept his promises to them. So God didn't give up on Israel, even when they broke his heart. And he really wanted to give up on them. And he still hasn't given up. Not on his creation, and not on us. He's still the God who is faithful even when it hurts, even when we break his heart. He proved that once and for all when an angry mob committed an even graver sin than worshiping before a golden calf. As they nailed Jesus, God's son, to a cross, Jesus pleaded, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." And God did just that. He forgave. And he hasn't stopped forgiving. Because God is faithful and remembers his promises. Will you pray with me? Living God, you brought the Israelites out of Egypt and toward a land of promise. But their fear and uncertainty led them to doubt you and to worship on their own terms. We do the same thing, God. We worship so many things besides you, putting so many things in front of you in our lives. Hear now our silent prayers of confession about the things that we worship instead of worshiping you. And now hear the good news, that God is a faithful, forgiving God, and we are each forgiven of our sinful worship and are invited back into God's love. Thanks be.